There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right. Here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you all along. Another hour of live local talk. Coming up, we'll talk a bit about what's happening. We've talked about a half a world away, but this hour we're going to talk a lot about what's happening back here at home. A Secretary of State's race, also an event the grounds has going on. And speaking of events going on, this is very cool. Fly on the Ford. This is happening at the Sonny Callahan Airport in Fairhope. Dwayne Thiessen with the air show. It's at, we talked about this, an aviation event coming to Fairhope, a fly-in. Dwayne, thanks for being on with us, and let's talk about this.
You bet, Sean. Great to be with you.
So this is so the Fairhope Airport, which I've been there. I know there's been events in the past. You have these aviation events, so a fly-in event. Who's coming? What is the Ford, Fly on the Ford?
Okay, so the Ford is an aircraft. The Ford Trimotor, specifically, is an aircraft that was built in 1928. The aircraft that is here and will be flying this week is one of the oldest airliner aircraft still flying in the United States. It is the original aircraft used in the first transcontinental air service in the United States. So it literally represents the dawn of commercial aviation as we are familiar with it. This airplane was actually built 1 year after Charles Lindbergh made his historic solo transatlantic flight.
So this plane has been in service that long. It's pretty amazing. Number one, I'll just make the joke. Where do you find parts for that, Dwayne? You know?
Yeah. So when you see it, first off, the engines are still supported today. They are obviously not original, but if you look at the airplane, the parts, if they need parts, they're fabricated. But what I want to stress is this airplane, since it's 93 years old, has quite a history that I can detail but isn't important here. What is germane is this airplane has completely been rebuilt, total. At least three times.
Wow. And
so it is, I looked at it yesterday. I sat in it yesterday. It is pristine. It's as good as it was the day it was built.
Is it still, Dwayne, is it still outfitted like a commercial passenger plane, or has that been changed? Like, if you look inside, what are you going to see?
You're going to see seats. You're going to see passenger seats like you would suspect. It's 10 seats in it behind the cockpit. But they're not seats like you're used to in modern-day aviation. They're the kind of seats that you would have flown in its original configuration, in its original use in 1929.
Now, so a little more leg room, or what compared to today? What should we expect? What would have our flight, and I don't know how far this was in service going across the country. How much leg room, how much space do you have in this Ford?
Well, the leg room's about the same as you would have today, but it's really interesting that you bring up this concept of flying across the country. When they were doing this, it took every bit of 2 days to go from New York to Los Angeles in this transcontinental service. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It is, and we could kind of get a taste of what it was like to fly back then. When talking about this event, the dates on this event, and can people get up close and personal? And you say fly on the Ford. What does that mean to people?
Okay, so the airplane is actually going to start operations on Thursday the 10th in the afternoon from 2 to 5. It'll be flying Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 5 o'clock p.m. The weather forecast is kind of iffy on a couple of days, but Saturday and Sunday are supposed to be beautiful, and we're going to have something there for the whole family. Antique automobiles, static display World War II aircraft, Stearman bi-wing trainers, home builds, some observation aircraft. There will be something there for everyone. So, and it doesn't cost anything for the public to show up and look around or take pictures.
This is cool, but we can book a seat on the Ford, right? How do we, if we want to get ahead and get a seat booked, how do we do that?
There's two ways of doing it. You can go online to flytheford.org and buy a seat ticket and then show up to fly, or you can walk up and buy a ticket at the event.
And it will take groups up for how long of a flight?
Well, the flight is going to be 15 to 20 minutes or more. I mean, it depends on how they're handled and what they have to do to get back to the pattern and back on the ground.
Right.
It's not a very long flight, but keep in mind, this is the oldest aircraft that any of our listening audience is ever likely to see, let alone ever have an opportunity to ride in.
Yeah, remind us, once again, it took its first flight when? He says 93 years old?
It's 93 years old. It was built in 1928, and it started air service in 1929.
You got to think about how it must have been very rare. Who traveled on a plane like the Ford back then? I mean, was it just the rich and famous or government officials? I mean, who was flying back then?
Well, it was obviously available to the public, but it's interesting that you should ask. There was an entrepreneur and a very famous aviator by the name of Charles Lindbergh who got together and decided that they were going to start what was called Transcontinental Air Transport. It was TAT. What they would do is they would ride a Pullman car, railroad car, by night and then fly in this aircraft by day. And it would take them 2 days to get across the country that way. This airplane doesn't go very fast. Full out with the power up, it only goes about 120, which all of your light civil aircraft just about go that fast or much faster.
Yeah, but back then, it must have seemed like time travel.
It must have. But, this was first class. This was like the premier thing to do because you could actually do it in 2 days instead of riding the train all the way across, which took several days longer.
This is really a cool piece of history, and to be able to fly inside a piece of history is a real treat. So once again, the event starting on Thursday, right?
Starts on Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And, Sean, I would love it if you'd show up then. We'll get you on that airplane.
Tell you what, if I can work that out with the old schedule there, I'd love to get inside that airplane. So
absolutely. I'd love to shake your hand and personally take you to that airplane. If you can't do it Thursday, come out Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. It'll be flying Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 9 to 5 p.m.
Fantastic. Once again, this is at the Sonny Callahan Airport there in Fairhope. And yes. The website again for somebody to buy a ticket, where do they go?
flytheford.org.
Great. Hey, thank you so much, and hopefully we'll see you out there this weekend.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
There he is, and it's the Fly the Ford going on starting on Thursday. Y'all get by and flytheford.org, the website. Coming right back, Ed Packard, running for Secretary of State of Alabama, joins us on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
118 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. As we continue to keep our eyes on Montgomery as much as the rest of the world. You know, usually it's like that's 75-25, but with what's been going on lately, we've been a little bit remiss, so I'm going to make up for that right now and say hello to Ed Packard, who is running for Secretary of State here in Alabama. Thanks for being on.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Sean.
Ed, this is, interesting. Your name's come up in our conversations here, and as it comes to the job of Secretary of State, you're the person I could say, hey, what's that job? Because you got a little bit of experience in that office.
Well, I do have some experience in the office. I worked there for nearly 25 years before I retired in December so that I could run for Secretary of State.
So you know this thing from the inside out. You're wanting to be our next Secretary of State. Let's talk about that position. Maybe something has changed, or maybe it's the nature of, probably is, with the political discourse. It is, Secretary of State of Alabama is somebody that shows up not only on radio shows like this, but on national TV. It's a high-profile job.
Well, it really is, and it was a little more low-key in the past, but especially after what happened in 2020, there's, you know, renewed interest in the office of the Secretary of State, not just in Alabama, but in states all across the country.
Yeah, it's a good thing that the discussion for Alabama is, hey, we did it correctly. I'll leave it to you if you want to discuss other states out there. But how do you do that? How do you make sure that we're at the top of the heap when it comes to how we administer elections?
Well, the bottom line is the reason that we tend to do elections well in Alabama, either through the administration out of the Secretary of State's office or the administration conducted by the probate judges, the circuit clerks, the boards of registrars, and the sheriffs, it all comes down to training and the commitment that each of those officials have in performing these statutorily required tasks to make the election a success. One thing I talk about when I speak to different groups, and particularly when I've spoke to the probate judges and the circuit clerks and the sheriffs, is that, you know, I've been working for 25 years trying to help them be able to do their job, you know, providing them training, providing them answers to legal questions, whatever resources we can do out of the Secretary of State. That's what I've been doing for 25 years, and that's what the Secretary of State should be doing.
Yeah, that's good. And the training, so nothing's a surprise come election day, correct?
Right, that's correct. you know, we make sure that the probate judges and the other election officials know what the statutory duties are. But we also make sure that when there's a change in state law by the legislature, that we get them trained up on that as well so that they're always aware of what's coming.
So about the other Secretary of State's office, like we've been saying, is discussed at a high profile level right now because of elections. But there's more to that job, right? I mean, Secretary of State has more than just administering, being over the elections.
Right. That is correct. Elections is our most high profile part of the office. But the office also handles registration of corporations, limited liability companies, name reservations for people that want to form a business in Alabama. We also handle trademarks. The Secretary, and I say we because I was there so long, that's just a habit. But you know, we also handle, there's other things like, you know, we have an authentications division that handles paperwork for people that are trying to adopt a child from a foreign country. We also work with the legislature when any legislation is passed into law by the legislature and the governor signs it. It comes to the Secretary of State's office to assign the act number and make sure that that gets published and included in the Code of Alabama. There's actually over 1,000 different duties assigned to the Secretary of State's office, either in the Constitution or in the Code of Alabama. And it's just too voluminous to mention them all here, but those are some of the high points.
That's, I mean, That's a big job description. Over a that's daunting. I mean, to know that you're responsible for all those things, and maybe they don't come up every day or every week, but that that's on your to-do list for the state.
Right, that's correct. And that's one reason why I'm glad that I could offer myself to the voting public this year, because I'm aware of the things that the office does. I'm ready to go on day one. I don't need on-the-job training, as you sort of alluded to a little while ago. I don't need on-the-job training to be able to start taking care of the tasks that are assigned to the Secretary of State's office.
I think it's good. I think we're having a little civics lesson at the same time we get to know you, Ed, because, I mean, it's, you know, once again, most people just associate it with election time, but a lot more goes on with the Secretary of State's office. Your training, having 2.5 decades there, you probably had a chance to touch most of the things you just listed.
Yes, sir, that is correct. There have been times, in fact, even though I was an election administrator in the office, there was times when they needed help over in business services. And I would go over and help them process paperwork submitted by businesses trying to, you know, get in, get registered here and get their businesses going. I've touched on a lot of different things over the 25 years that I was there. Now, let me mention, even though I had almost 25 years in with the Secretary of State, my election experience in Alabama actually goes back 29 years. And then I had 1 year with the North Carolina State Board of Elections, which was very informative to see how another state, you know, conducted their election processes.
Just joining us, talking to Republican Ed Packard, running for Secretary of State of Alabama. What about going forward and questions about, you know, where we get good marks on how the elections have been administered, but there's so many questions out there about changes, maybe not for Alabama, but for other states. What is there anything you see that we could do technology-wise coming around the corner, or anything that you think might change with that, how we'd administer elections?
Well, there are some things that I believe need to be taken care of. For example, a lot of people are concerned about whether or not our voting machines can be hacked through the Internet. And right now, you may be surprised to know, Alabama law does not prohibit our voting machines from being hooked to the Internet. Senator Chambliss, my senator here in Autauga County, he has introduced a bill that would make that illegal to connect by Internet to our voting machines. And I fully support that bill. But in reviewing his bill, I also recommended that he include some other technologies like Bluetooth and near-field communication, and then have a catch-all for any similar technology that we either have now or that will come about in the future. That's one of the things that we need to do. There's some other things. There's a lot of concern, and it's been going on for a while, just in society in general, about people's private information, personally identifying information. Right now, most of your listeners may not realize that under state law, the Secretary of State is required to sell their voter information to anybody who's willing to put the money on the table. And they can an individual can get everything on every voter in the state except the last 4 digits of their Social Security number or their driver's license number. Now, the legislature has taken some steps to protect people in certain situations, like people who have been victims of domestic violence. Also, last year, they passed a law that would allow judges and law enforcement officials and even legislators to have their information protected. I believe that the legislature should extend the right to every voter in the state of Alabama to opt out of having their information sold. Just like credit card companies, you know, let us tell them, don't share my information. I think the voters of Alabama should be afforded that opportunity as well.
I think you've got a lot of people nodding their heads with you there, Ed, that would agree. And that process would be where you'd have to, maybe we get a card to check here to opt out, or would we contact the office? How would that be done?
Well, I think in the initial round, for everyone who's already registered to vote, we would have to develop some method of communication. But we could do that through the Internet, just like we allow online registration now. But we could also do a mailing and that sort of thing. Then we would also need to incorporate into the voter registration form itself a question just saying, you know, do not share my information. And if they check the box, then we don't share their information.
Yeah, a lot of people are ignorant of that, right? I mean, I think the first part, I think you're going to get, if elected, you're going to get a lot of people say, yeah, don't share my information. I think that's going to be overwhelming.
I've already, when I mentioned that, because it is part of my campaign platform, that is one of the things that I've been talking about since December. And when I do talk about it in front of Republican Party groups and other groups, and I mention that, it's just like you say, there's a lot of head nodding going on and people saying, yeah, we need to take care of that.
Yeah, and so any of these groups, we just have 1 minute left here, but currently any of these groups can buy from the Secretary of State's office this information about Alabama voters.
Right. Anybody nationwide, or even if we wanted to say it, even from China, they could purchase the list. There's no restrictions. And in fact, the lists are actually given free to the state Republican Party and the state Democratic Party and any other party that might get ballot access in an election. And they get it free
Ed, let's do this. People want to get more information about your platform, all these different issues. Where do they go? Where do they educate themselves?
Okay, I've got a website. It's edpackard.com, and that's Packard like the old automobile, or for younger people like Hewlett-Packard laptops and printers. They can also email me at ed@edpackard.com, or they can call me at 334-826-3606.
Ed Packard, we appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, that'll be great.
There he is, Ed Packard, running for Secretary of State here in Alabama. edpackard.com, the website. Check that out. All right, coming back here in just a few minutes. I think he's coming in. I think he's going to be in here. Josh Woods with the grounds and what they're calling here. I'm going to question him on this. Some hard-hitting questions. Mobile's largest yard sale. I thought that used to go on in my neighborhood when I was a kid, but I guess maybe it's not. We'll find out more about it when we return. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, and hopefully I got some emails here and text about what Ed Packard was talking about. There's a part of that, too. He talked about the political parties. We're going to get him back on to talk about how the two parties get those names for free in our state, but other parties do not. They have to pay like whoever is getting. Did y'all know that? Does that bother you at all, that the Secretary of State's office can legally sell our contact info to whomever? Yeah, whomever calls my phone 86 million times a day or sends all those mailers. Not just a point of interest. We'll talk about that some more. And like I said, I get to see my buddy Josh Woods in studio, man, coming in to see me from the grounds. Hey, Josh.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me. Hey. I really appreciate it.
So good to get you back in here. And there used to be a yard sale. It was like a never-ending yard sale. When I was a kid, the neighborhood next to us would go by, and it's like, it seemed like every Saturday. I don't know. It's a constant, like a bazaar that was going on there. I thought that was the world's largest yard sale, but you tell me no.
Well, so we're trying to build Mobile's largest yard sale. I think there's like that place in Texas, like Big Top or whatever.
Right,
and
right.
It's like 30 miles of yard sales and junk collecting and stuff. But right. We're trying to build Mobile's largest yard sale out the grounds. We did it last year, kind of just out of a something to do because, mm-hmm. you know, we had that little shutdown of COVID
thing. That little thing, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that little bump in the road. And obviously people were clamoring and wanting something to do. So we came up with an outdoor event that wouldn't be a super spreader if they called it.
Right.
And that's kind of where we got started. But this year we're back at it, and it's going to be bigger and better than it was last year.
Okay, so talk to me about this. So from the seller and the buyer perspective, who gets to sell? How do you get into this?
Well, so we have 900 parking spots out at the grounds. They're on our paved parking area.
Right.
And so what we're doing, as the grounds, we're selling our parking spots for $25 a parking spot. So 10 by 20 spot. You could buy multiple spots, but you got to buy at least one to sell. And then you set up a bring all your stuff. I've been saying...
I'm going to need a bigger space.
Your crap is somebody's treasure.
Yes.
but I've been told to say your stuff is somebody's treasure.
But we'll take it both ways.
But, you know, come out, sell. As far as coming to the yard sale, it's from 7 a.m. to noon this Saturday.
Okay.
So if you buy a spot, you can get there at 5 a.m., start setting up. And at 7 o'clock, we're going to let everybody come shopping. And it's free to get in, free to enter. You know, we'll have ATMs on site if you need cash. It's basically kind of, I guess, just a glorified yard sale swap shop out in our parking lot.
Okay, you get it. When you said to start shopping at 7 a.m.,
yeah.
because you know what happens. Like with the other yard sales, if people say starts at 8, then people are there in the yard at 6.
Yeah, they're parked in your driveway at 4 a.m. saying, oh, there's a yard sale here, a garage sale here. Right. But we do realize there will be people there early. But, you know, we're telling our vendors that they have to be done by 7 o'clock.
Okay, ready to go, ready to sell.
Yep, your cars have to be out of the parking, out of the sales area in a parking spot, and we're going to fire it up about 7 a.m.
So you pull into the parking spot and set up your tables for all your wares or whatever, and then you go park elsewhere. And
yeah, you do. So we're going to move all of our vendors out, come set up, unload, offload, whatever your vehicle is, set up in your parking spot there. And then obviously we have plenty of parking out at the ground, so we'll get everybody out of that area so they don't hit anyone with their car.
Good.
And we'll let everybody go shopping for from 7 to noon.
Okay, somebody wants to be a vendor here, they be selling there. How do they pay you the $25? What do they do?
Very easy. We've made it very easy. Just visit us at thegroundsmobile.com. Click on the first thing that pops up there is, are you interested in taking part of the yard sale? So click that. We'll get some information from you. You can pay right online there.
Okay.
Or just call us at 251-344-4573. That's our office. We'll be glad to sign you up that way as well.
Okay, and the rest of us just show up at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, be ready to buy some stuff.
All right, good stuff. Let's talk about what else you got on the radar at the grounds.
We all the time have stuff going on.
No,
we just had the circus, the Hannaford Circus, sold their last couple shows out this weekend.
Nice.
So I really appreciate Mobile coming out and supporting that family. So they're packed up, but we move into the yard sale. We have some concerts coming up. Obviously, the Chocolate Festival's coming up in April, and
we
have a lot going on.
Somebody hadn't been to the Chocolate Festival.
It's all things chocolate. I think they
chocolate fountains, y'all, like you've never seen.
The smell is amazing, and we appreciate whenever after they leave, the smell kind of lingers there for a couple of days. But all things chocolate, we all the time have stuff. We have some announcements coming up. Hopefully, this next couple months about some stuff that we're doing out at the grounds.
Okay.
But we'll kind of see once we get all that kind of in place, and then obviously come October, there's the fair. So
I've heard of this thing before.
Yeah, little thing. Over 100,000 people come to it, just the greatest 10 days that you can think about.
We talked a bunch before at this year's fair and how important it was to get things, back to whatever normal is. It was received quite well.
It was. We were down a little bit on attendance compared to 2019, but, we anticipated that. But overall, people stayed longer with us. There were people that were coming as soon as we opened at 11 o'clock or noon on the weekdays, and they weren't going home till 7. And
that's a full day at the fair.
They took advantage of that full day. We're excited about this year. We got some new things coming. Obviously, we're doing some improvement projects out there. New paving, reworking our midway. The midway's going to look like it's never looked before. So we're excited.
A bunch on the ag side this year. A bunch of changes there.
So. We did, and we're continuing that too. We're going to have everything from like glass blowers over there on the ag side of the house. We're beefing up. Pun intended.
That's funny. I get jokes.
Beefing up the ag side. It's going to be something really cool this year as far as our goal on the ag side of the house is to show people and to teach people something they didn't know when they come to the fair.
That's true. And you always learn great stuff. And once again, you can learn what people have been storing in their closets for all this time when you show up this weekend at Mobile's largest yard sale.
Yeah. Styles come back in trend. So
you and I show that with our dress. Yeah, it comes back. Okay. And once again, website, they can buy their space on there.
Yeah, but thegroundsmobile.com or give us a shout at 251-344-4573.
All right, Josh. I appreciate you, man. See you out there.
Thanks for having me. I
appreciate it. All right. Coming back here in just a couple minutes. It's time for a checkup. Dan's going to take over, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Once again, for tomorrow's show, I mentioned Jay Young. He's been on with us in the past, so he's Texas oil guy, right? Speculating, and I think the last time we had him on was when oil went, remember this, to $0 a barrel, actually in some trading overnight. Remember, it went to like negative something, and I had to call this guy and say, how's that possible? How could it be? Well, he explained it back then. Now we're looking at some estimates out there. Now, we're like at $130 a barrel right now. There are some people speculating out there for $200 a barrel oil. I don't know. Do we make that or not? That's why we're going to have him on and talk more about that. And yeah, bring in that discussion we've been talking about in the first hour as we shift, supposedly. They still hadn't figured it out in Washington. But if we're not going to buy Russian oil, then we're going to buy Iranian oil? Going to buy Venezuelan oil? Wow, and still continuing to get oil from the Saudis. It's a It's a kind of an in-depth discussion on that. So if you have questions about that, specific questions like, you know, what percentage does the oil company make, or the transport company, or, you know, what oil should be, you know, priced at if there's X supply, all those kind of questions. I got somebody on tomorrow to talk more about that. Plus, we'll talk to Sheriff Sam Cochran tomorrow, and Senator Tommy Tuberville on our list of the conversation going on tomorrow's Midday Mobile. So you can check it out there. And quick reminder, too, it is going on Thursday through Sunday at the Fairhope Airport, the air show with your chance to fly on the Ford 93-year-old passenger plane is going to be out there. So put that on your to-do list as well. All right, coming right back, it's time for a checkup with Dan right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
It is time for a checkup. My name is Dan Brennan on Midday Mobile right now. Along with our guest is Dr. Kevin Donahoe of Alabama Orthopedic Clinic. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Let's talk about this new Globus Excelsius GPS. It is, well, what is it?
So the Globus GPS robot is a new platform that we're using with spine surgery. Robots have been around in other parts of medicine, OBGYN, general surgery, urinary surgery. But we use this to use smaller incisions and accurately place screws. We use it mostly for the lumbar spine.
Okay.
So we can put screws in the lumbar spine, that's the low back, through a very small incision that doesn't disrupt the muscle. And then we can do fusions where we stabilize a segment of the spine that's moving abnormally because of arthritis. And that can sometimes cause back pain and pinched nerves, which causes pain in the legs. So we can do this through small incisions and use the robot primarily as an aiming arm. So you have a CT scan, you take some x-rays in the operating room, and then you move this robot in, and it gives you an aiming arm. So it shows you precisely where to put the screw, you know, before it goes through the skin down into the spine. And it's really been a game changer as far as the way we're doing spine surgery here in Mobile.
And it can't be much more important than doing spine surgery. So this is accurate beyond measure. The way you would do it in the past was all manually, I suppose, right?
Yeah, so
put a lot of pressure on the surgeon.
So you make a, you know, traditionally you make an incision down the middle of the back, and you expose all the anatomy, all the bony anatomy, okay, and you strip all the muscle away from it. And then you have some landmarks, and you say, okay, I'm going to put a screw down what's called the pedicle, you know, here, here, and here. And you do that visually, like you're saying, and then you check it with an x-ray machine. And so you're exposed to the x-ray machine, and you strip all the muscle away. And so then you sew them up, and you say, well, I hope your back doesn't hurt anymore. So this allows us to go between the muscles where there's not as much disruption, and you can do it through a smaller incision with less disruption, what's kind of been known as minimally invasive surgery now. And it's really been good. We've had a number of patients we've been doing this for about a year. And instead of staying two or three nights in the hospital, they're going home the next day. And I'd say in a carefully chosen, you know, good patient selection, these people do really well with this type of surgery.
That is great. That is a game changer. So if you're having some sort of spine problem, they should most certainly talk to Alabama Orthopedic Clinic and find out if this is going to apply to them, correct?
Yeah, correct. It's not for everyone. They compare their spine surgeries, and they're not all the same. But we'll be more than happy to evaluate someone, especially if they've been told they need surgery, and particularly a lumbar fusion. I'd be more than happy to evaluate them and see if it can be done with a robot.
And again, that's lower back?
The low back, correct.
All right, now you're out of the hospital sooner. Would I presume then that the recovery is faster as well?
Yeah, I did a guy yesterday, and he's going home today, and he's been up with physical therapy today, the day after surgery. And, you know, he has some back pain, of course, but his legs feel great, and his back doesn't hurt as much as he did when he came to the hospital. So the recovery as far as getting up in less pain and getting around and doing the things you want to do, I feel like it's going to be much, much faster recovery.
So there could be somebody listening to us right now that has had lingering back pain that's really bothered them for, say, a couple of years. This might be the answer to something they've been worried about or thinking there was not really a definitive answer. This might be the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, not all back pain's kind of created equally. So okay. This is particularly good for people that have instability where two bones are kind of wiggling around a little bit and that causes chronic pain. Or if you have a really bad disc or you had previous surgery on that disc and now you have a lot of back pain. So it has some, you know, that, like I said, there's some patient selection certainly involved in this, but you don't know until you've been worked up and had an MRI and been examined and x-rays and whatnot. So
you go through a few tests, a battery test, to find out if you're a candidate for the surgery.
Correct. Okay.
I'm talking with Kevin Donahoe, and we were talking, he's with Alabama Orthopedic Clinic, by the way. It is a time for a checkup is the name of the segment. And by the way, the Globus Excelsius GPS is exclusively in this area at Alabama Orthopedic Clinic, correct?
Correct. We're the only orthopedic group in town that's using it at Spring Hill Hospital.
So let's talk about the other benefits to this. I guess it would limit radiation exposure. Talk about that.
Yeah. So traditionally, when you put screws in the spine, you take a number of x-rays to make sure the screws are in the right place. This technology, you do take a couple of x-rays at the beginning of the case, but once you get those x-rays with the patient asleep on the operating table, you merge them with a CT scan, or known as a CAT scan, and then you can plan your screws that way. And then once you do that, there's maybe one check to make sure you like the screws after you use the robot, and then people in the room, the surgeon, the patient are not exposed to any continuous radiation.
So you've been using it for about a year. So just tell me about your satisfaction with it as the surgeon himself.
Yeah, it's been a different way that I'm doing my lumbar fusions now. So like I was saying before, traditionally we make an incision. You strip all the muscle off of the bone, and then you pack bone kind of down in the outside on the lateral part of the spine, put screws in, and then you hope that their back feels better.
How does someone know if they're ready for that first consultation to sit down and hash it all out and see if they're could be a patient for this or something else from Alabama Orthopedic altogether?
Yeah, so, you know, we see a number of patients. We see weekend warriors that have back pain that come in with a couple of days of pain, and those folks are pretty nice because pretty confident you can make them better with maybe a shot and some physical therapy. What I really like doing is seeing people and evaluating them for surgery to see if I can help them with what I can do as a surgeon. And so there are really only about 4 or 5 procedures that I do. So primarily in the lumbar spine, we're looking for, do you have a really isolated bad disc that needs to be fused that can help with your back pain? Do you have any instability that's moving around? We're really good at taking care of pain that shoots down your arm from a pinched nerve in your neck, or pain that shoots down your leg or both legs from a pinched nerve in your back. So those are the people that we really kind of get excited about, because those are the folks that we can more likely help with surgery. It doesn't mean we can't help folks. It just means that we probably get our best results with people that have those complaints.
And your satisfaction from those results has got to be great too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's always nice to, you know, I try not to take anyone to the operating room unless I think I can make them better when we leave. So I'm pretty conservative with recommending surgery for people.
You can go by Alabama Orthopedic Clinic. You can check them out online. You can also call them, and you can find out more about this Globus Excelsius GPS. This is for lower back lumbar surgery. Dr. Kevin Donahoe, our guest today on It Is Time for a Checkup on Midday Mobile. Thank you for your time, Doctor, and congratulations on not only, you know, the success you've had, but the success you've had with these patients, giving them back a greater quality of life.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been very excited to share it with you.